Session number 3173, Reel 1.
This is Conway Lloyd Morgan talking to John Worsley, Reel 1. Mr. Worsley, can you tell me how you came to join the Navy at the outbreak of the war?
Well, right at the beginning of the war, 1939, my father had returned. My father had been a naval officer in the First War, and he'd returned to the Navy, and he was in at Plymouth as a passive defence officer, a three-striper commander. And they were at that early months, early weeks of the war, really, we were commissioning our merchant cruisers, which are, people today probably don't know what they are. They were merchant ships with armed with 6-inch guns. We had 7 6-inch guns on board ours. And I joined the captain of one particular one called HMS Laurentic, which was an ex-P&O ship. He was very short of crew. At that time, we were very short of crew of all kinds in the Navy. And he was allowed to enlist a certain number of midshipmen on a merchant service articles called T-124. And I happened to be around, but my father made friends with the captain. And I was enlisted on board this ship on this T-124 article as a R&R midshipman. And we had little blue tabs on our lapels. Now, this article was, you were only in the Royal Navy for that particular ship. If your ship was sunk, you were on the beach and you could join the army when the else. And as such, I had six weeks training, I think, in gunnery and ordinary drill. I'd never been in the Navy before, and so I had to be trained and so on. And then went to sea in the armed merchant cruiser. Really, that's how I joined the Navy. Later, during that year, which we were patrolling around Iceland in the Northern Patrol, I started movement really to get into the RNVR as opposed to the RNR because I didn't want to join the army. So, and during that time, of course when the ship was sunk, I was by this time RNVR. And I became a one-striper and went to King Alfred, the factory down in Hove, for training RNVR officers.
And you served on board the Laurentic for about...
Yes, from September 39 till November 40. We were sunk in on the 13th, I think. Good date, I suppose. 13th of November. So, and then I went and became RNVR then.
And this series of drawings, which you sold to the war artists at that time, were mainly done.
Yes, entirely
on
my
the
own.
Spot.
Yes, entirely. I mean, I wasn't official or anything like that. I merely, as I had been an artist in civil life, I felt. You know, when one's young like this, you think the world's come to the to an end. This war. You know, I thought I'd never paint again, or I'd be killed, or something. You know, and I thought I must carry on. That's really it. And as a very junior naval officer, I thought I'd go on drawing. That's really, and I used to send them to Sir Kenneth Clark's War Artists Exhibition, and they were pleased to have them because I was about the only chap doing things actually in active service.
How did you in fact get to hear about Kenneth Clark's committee?
Well, this is what I'm trying to think. I think you asked me this once before, and I can't remember how it happened. I don't know. It's a long time ago, and I'm not quite sure. Yeah.
And I believe they used to pay you about 2 guineas each for these drawings.
Yes, it was very little. It was quite small. Then I was getting my ordinary pay, which incidentally was 5 shillings a day in those days. But then gin was tuppence a tot, I think, and that was a double, so you got all right.
Right. Are any of these the individuals portrayed in this series of drawings, which are the 220 on Sirius. Identifiable as particular people, for example, the guns crew?
Well, they are, but I can't recall their names. These are particular ones, because they were the guns crew that I was supposed to be in charge of. I think they knew more about it than I did, actually. But they are individuals. You can see that one particular there is the same chap as that.
But that, in other words, the person in LD-223 is also the subject of 224, the chap.
That's right. That's right, mm-hmm. It is. You can see the black beard there.
Yes.
And this is the same chap. Apart from that, it's awful, I can't remember their names. I think that they're Crossley or something. It's awful not to be able to remember the names. It's so long ago, you know. This is our first lieutenant, Commander Daintree, as he's written there. He was he's identifiable. And this is the same, again, this is a crew
same.
Exercising. Mm.
And presumably the guns crew were naval ratings rather than merchant seamen.
Yes, they were Navy. Mm. We had a lot of Newfoundland ratings, but they were mostly boats crews and more seamen's jobs because they were such good seamen. But these were naval ratings, these the guns crews, because they had been trained in it.
And in fact, there is the 6-inch, one of the pictures is of the 6-inch gun in action. That was against what? Stopping a blockade run?
Well, war seems to be. Somebody once said it was, it's 9% boredom and 10% sheer fear. I think the odds are even less. But we'd only got one. We were up. We were patrolled from Iceland, between Iceland and Greenland, or between Iceland and the Shetlands, and in order to stop German raiders coming through. Or tankers or suppliers for submarines going around the Denmark Strait there. And we did catch one, and this is an occasion when we did. And it was rather intriguing because this particular ship had a great big Norwegian flag painted on the side of it. And we had an R&R officer on board who was there really specifically for recognizing ships. And So before he'd hardly seen the funnels and the two masts coming over the horizon, he said it was such a ship that had sailed from in the Tanganyika line from Hamburg to Pernambuco or something. And when it came up over the horizon, he said, "I'm sure it's that. It's a German ship. I know the ship." And they claimed they were Norwegian. And finally, of course, they had to admit that they were Germans. And they abandoned ship and we sank it. So, I mean, it wasn't really a very fierce action.
I see. But still, there's a certain vigour in the drawing.
Well, it's a very noisy procedure. I mean, the same vigour takes place whether you're firing bricks at a stationary ship or having a battle. I mean, the same action goes on.
Are you in touch at all with any of the people you served with in the Laurentic?
No. No, For a little while, I was with Glyn Griffiths, who now is retired. He was the skipper for some while of the Winston Churchill, training ship. Mm-hmm. Well, he was a midshipman. He was another blue tabber like me, and he became skipper of Winston Churchill. I used to see him quite a bit, but I haven't seen him for ages now.
And finally, in November 1940, the Laurentic was sunk.
We were sunk, yes. Finally, yes.
The picture that you did of it, you presumably painted when you returned home.
Yes, I had about 3 weeks leave, and I painted it during that leave. Mm-hmm. And it was received happily by the War Honours Committee. And later on, I think, I don't know how long, what time it happened, but they sent out an exhibition of paintings to South America, I think it was. And this picture was amongst them, and this ship was sunk, so the painting was sunk. So I've done another one, and I think this photograph here is the original. Yes,
it must
be. It is. It's got 41. Yeah. Yes. But it's a sort of curious little story. The picture itself was sunk again.
Yes. And how, in fact, was the Laurentic sunk?
We were coming back from. We had changed our patrol. We'd gone down towards Gibraltar for some reason or other. I think, again, we were short of ships in those days for convoying, and we were coming back, and we were about abreast of Ulster, I suppose, about 300 miles out in the Atlantic, together with another ship, at Patroclus. We were both coming back together. And it was middle of the night. It was before the days of ASDIC, you see. We couldn't... we hadn't got this Ecosound ASDIC device. And it was in the middle... No, it was about 9 o'clock, pitch dark, 9 o'clock at night. And I'd just come off watch, you see. I'd had the evening, the 8 till... 8 till... If I'd come off at 8, I had the dog. The submarine was on the surface, and he fired one torpedo into us, which gave us a very heavy list, and we couldn't fire our guns at him. Mm-hmm. And then he steamed off and fired one into the Proclus, and then came back. We had three all together, and she took about 20 minutes, I suppose, to go down. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And how long were you in the boats?
Well, this was it doesn't look it, but it was a waterlogged lifeboat. We were sitting in the water up mm-hmm. to about this thing. They had buoyancy tanks, so perfectly safe, but it's jolly cold. And we were in there for about 9 hours, I think it was, and a destroyer picked us up in the morning. Quite a nice... There was a funny little... You can't see it in this photograph, a little story here. In the painting, there's a little light on right on the peak here in the forecastle. Mm-hmm. There was a Canadian officer who didn't get a boat, and he was on board. I don't know why, he should have jumped off. But as the ship went down, he walked further and further up the forecastle until he was right on the top point here. And as the ship slipped away, he just swam off. And he was heading a torch. In the actual painting, there's a little light at the top there.
And were many of the crew lost?
I think the figure was 43. I wouldn't like to be quoted too hard, and I think we lost about 43, largely from the second torpedo. We went off under a boat that had been lowered with chaps in it, and that I think was the main casualty list.
And so then you returned, you were on the beach, as it were, or had you by then?
Well, by this time I'd just become one striper then, mm-hmm. RNVR, a wavy stripe, and I went to King Alfred, which was the training place at Hove. And sort of joined the general stream of RNVR officers, mm-hmm. and had my training. And then I went to a destroyer, one of these four-stack American ones, which I think we bought for Bermuda or something. And I was in her for 6 months in Atlantic convoys all the time.
What was the name of that?
That was HMS Lancaster. She was called, and she was ex-Philip, I think her name was in American Lancaster. We had, there were 50 of them, you probably know in the sort of history of the war. They were very fast, very good ships, but they were no good in any sea. We couldn't keep up a convoy if there was any sea at all.
They were only really fair weather ships.
They were really, yes. They were very rapid, and round bottoms, they rolled. They rolled about 45 degrees either way, the slightest drop of a wave.
And at the same time you carried on...
These trawler droids, this is when I was having an ASDIC course. And this was a trawler with ASDIC. Mm-hmm. And I just used to take my drawing book along and draw. This isn't a destroyer, this is a trawler.
These are 986 and 985.
That's right.
And did you do a lot of other drawings which you sold at the same time?
No, I didn't. I don't think one had time, you know. I'm really, when I look at these, I'm surprised I managed to do them at all. No, I didn't really. I illustrated one book for a man called John Fernald, who wrote a book on these American destroyers, and I illustrated that for him. But that's the only thing other sort of extra naval work I did.
I just wondered if you'd done sort of drawings for your shipmates or...
I did an occasional portrait drawing, I suppose. Yes, mm. I must have done. Mm. Yes.
Yeah. And then the next series you have are... These are on the four-stepper, are they?
This is... 1693. I transferred after that. After 6 months of this, I transferred to another merchant AMC called the Ranpura, which was, this is on board her, which took me across to America, Norfolk, Virginia, where I joined a cruiser called the Devonshire, and this was on passage. Mm-hmm. This is the galley, this is on passage in her. Mm-hmm.
And so these...
And that comes to the Devonshire there.
The Devonshire. Mm-hmm. That's 2280 onwards.
That's right.
One takes it the weather was rather better on the Devonshire.
Well, the Devonshire, we had a year, a long time, in the Indian Ocean. We used to click convoys up at Aden and run down to Australia, Fremantle, Perth, and it was trooping. Very impressive. That's a picture. No, it's in the other room. Big, enormous ships. They were Queen Mary, Ile-de-France, New Amsterdam, these big ocean greyhounds. And we used to, in convoy, steam down with these troops on board at about 23, 25 knots, mm-hmm. flat out. It was very impressive in those days, these big ships.
And this was taking the Australian...
This was taking Australian troops backward and forwards, actually, mm. on leave and back to the Middle East, really. I mean, to the Desert War,
yes.
you see, which is going on.
And did you see any action on board the Devonshire?
No, we never had any action on board her at all. We got frightened once or twice because the Japs were a bit close, but we never had any trouble.
And are you in touch with any of the people you met
in Devonshire? Occasionally one Royal Marine officer. I occasionally see, but not very often. That's about the only one. Mm. That's an example of a Devonshire torpedo tube being loaded. That's LD-2983. That's Devonshire again. Yes, these are all Devonshire.
Mm. Really, all you had the time to do were these little pencil drawings?
Yes, yes. There is one big one of the Devonshire where we're squirting off her walrus. Mm. That's the only big... And that one, too. That's when we return home.
I see. This is in dry. This is refitting in dry dock.
Yes, which was up in Newcastle. I think we were. Yes, we came in. This was when she paid off at the end. That's the end of 42.
So you really only had the time to do
little drawings. Yes, yes. Mm. After all, I mean, I was a regular watchkeeping officer, and there isn't all that much time. You have either your proper duties to do, I suppose.
So after the Devonshire paid off?
I had a bit of leave, and instead of being appointed to another ship, I was appointed to CNC staff med as a war artist. It was really a sort of simply sent to that as another appointment, really.
And this was arranged by Kenneth Clark's committee?
Yes. I never quite know... It must have been, he must have been the seat of it, because I was interviewed by Admiral James, I think it was then, who was in charge of war artists and correspondence and all this kind of thing at the Admiralty. And when I got my appointment, I was told to report to him for briefing. And he said, he sort of rocked on his back on his heels and said, "My boy, you're the youngest war artist we have. When you get to the med, you're not going to sit on your bottom in Malta. You've got to put your head in man's mouth and bring something back, you see?" And that's really why I put my head in too far and got caught captain.
But you had time to do some work.
Yes, I did quite a lot, yes. Then. Yes, I did the two landings in Sicily and Salerno, which I think there are some pictures here, actually, of various things. Yes, those are enormous caves in Sicily.
What sort of... It's a little to tell from this one, 3364, what the actual proportions were.
Well...
About how tall were the caves?
Well, let's see. This is a mine, and they're stored on the bottom here. So they must have been... They were about 50 feet high, I think, so these holes. If they're up... I didn't say Malili Caves, which are just outside Augusta, that's right, just outside Augusta they are. Mm-hmm. And they were natural caves, except that you can see the proportion there, so if that's a six-foot man. Mm. But they've been added to, or the reverse, they've been mined out. Mm. And the Germans were storing, as you see, mines in them, and workshops and things. They were just sort of rather interesting pictures, I thought, really. That belongs to this lot, really. The taller lot. Oh, no, it doesn't. No, I beg your pardon. No, it doesn't.
It's
no,
a
it doesn't.
Big mind sweeper,
no,
isn't it?
As you were, I'm sorry. This was later after I left Augusta. This is coming back through the Straits of Messina from Salerno after the invasion. I joined her and came back.
Yes. And going back to the Sicily invasion, did you manage to actually watch the assault?
I managed to get a place in a what is called a flak landing craft, which had anti-aircraft guns on board, and they go in the drill in those days. They went in with the assault craft, and anchored off with the assault. And so I thought this is a good one to be in because you go in with the assault, you see the beginning, and then you sit there and watch the rest come in, and so on. And which I did. It was very noisy, but I'll take my paints and my watercolours and boards and things, and so I set them up on this rather minute bridge. It had two pom-poms, I think, either side, or Erlikons. No, I think they were Erlikons. And I set my paint up, got nice little washes going, and so on. And then, of course, we were dive bombed by an Italian airplane, and everything went sky high. All my papers and boards and water and everything. So I decided this is no way of painting. You'll have to do it with drawings. From then on, I used just a drawing pad, making lots of notes and little drawings, and painted them when I got back.
Yes.
But the it was sort of thing because it was a full scale invasion that thing. But I felt because I was a war artist, I was sort of like a referee. I was on the touchline watching, and therefore nobody would hurt me. It was a curious psychological approach.
but anyway, you did get away safely through both the Sicily and
Oh, yes. The Salerno one, there's a picture there. I was in that monitor, the Roberts, and I had a very good view of that. We lay off and bombarded. I think those are all of Sicily or Augusta. That's Reggio, bit of Reggio. That's the early morning Reggio. That's taken from where I was in the flat landing craft. It's something rather like that.
That's number 3373.
Yeah. That's actually and this is later on in the day when more stuff coming in.
Mm-hmm. It's 3372, funnily enough, but the numbering was done later, of course.
Yes, that's the first one of that. Mm-hmm. As the sun came up, as it says, the title is there. Mm-hmm.
And the pictures of Augusta were done, presumably.
Well, I was staying in Augusta before the Reggio landing because it was recently captured, and these were done there. There's a night raid there, North 338 over. That's Robs.
And that is the.
Yes. And that's seaplanes. That's in Augusta Harbour, Italian seaplanes. Sunk, floating, half sunk. And that's a daylight raid on Augusta. It was very spectacular, as I tried to make out. You know, there was an enormous amount of popping and banging going on. Everybody firing at these chaps. Mm-hmm.
And Augusta was also used as an MTB base.
Yes, it was, for raiding up the coast and so on. Mm-hmm. They used to go out in the evening and do it at night and come back again. That's going into.
It's entering Catania.
Catania, yes. So and it's difficult to depict this, but that was. The Germans were still in Sicily then, and that is actually the German front line there, and this is the British line. You can see that. It's just indicated by a bit of.
Just across the sort of under the shadow of Etna.
Just under the shadow of Etna. The actual lines were there, like that. They were firing at each other, and we were bringing in troops behind.
Anyway, so after you covered the Salerno landing...
That's Salerno, that's Robert's firing.
That's 3374.
The monitor. That was rather intriguing. She'd done so much work, the left gun, I think it was. Finally, you can see from this picture, there's the Roberts here, and these are the landing craft going in underneath her bombardment. But finally, the left gun gave up. It got so tired and hot. And one shell just sort of plopped out of the final sort of burst, and in amongst these Landgrave. It didn't go off, fortunately, but it had given up.
It had done so much. The war had just got completely worn out.
The paint was all peeling off the barrel and so on. Mm-hmm. And it really, you know, it had died. And that's the inside of her. That's the 15-inch guns inside her.
And presumably, actually, the Monitor had been in action in the First World War as well.
Yes, she was, by Jove, I think. Roberts, yes, I think she was a First War ship, yes. Very slow, but this is one big turret.
Mm-hmm. In fact, the Roberts was the last...
The last ship I was in, I think, yes, except... For, yes, well, then I went back to Malta, because there was nothing... This is back in October, I suppose, 43. I went back to Malta. There was not much more going on then. The Salerno landing was over. The front line was just about the middle of Italy, if you think of the map. Just about the centre, right across the middle. And I was sitting in Malta, remembering Admiral James's instructions. I thought I'd better find something to do. And I thought, well, I'll go up. It was a nice job, this, really. I had a free hand. I could join any ship I liked or go anywhere. And I forewent the idea of going to Cairo or Alexandria and living it up. I thought I'd better do my job. So I went. And I thought, I'll go up the east coast of Italy, up the Adriatic coast, and see how far up I can get, see what's going on up there. So I did. I went to Taranto, and I think I flew to Taranto, and then I joined Admiralty Surveyor, who... Oh dear, I said bad about names. He's finally became an admiral. Anyway, it doesn't matter. And I went up as far as Termoli, which is on the Adriatic coast, which is where the front line started, really, then, and I found all sorts of strange goings on up there. There was an MTB there and some landing craft, and they were running up sort of saboteurs up the coast at night up to Venice, Chioggia Beach, and also contacting. In fact, I went up one evening with an MTB to land a lot of saboteurs. It was extremely funny, actually, really in retrospect, of course, because I one of the things. I had to be prepared to do as a war, because I had been in the Navy proper, was to lend a hand any time it was needed. I mean, if they wanted an extra watchkeeper or something, I must join in. But I went up there one evening, late at night, in this MTB. We landed about six, I've got a drawing of them somewhere, I think, six saboteurs on this beach at Chioggia in the middle of the night. And I was asked to row one of them ashore in this rubber dinghy, very, very dark night, but absolutely calm, and you could hear the German transports going along the coast road. And I had a monk, a sort of a disguised monk with a wonderful sort of hassock, wearing a hassock, and underneath the hassock was a whole row of hand grenades underneath this thing. I've got a drawing in there, I think, of him. And I was asked to row him ashore. So if we got into the rubber dinghy, and he got in the stern, and I pulled him ashore, landed on the beach, terrified in case somebody would open up. I didn't know whether they knew we were there. And then he jumped onto the sand. I turned around, and he said, "Momento, momento, my bicycle." And I had to go all the way back to the boat and get his bicycle for him and do it again.